Big Red Bench. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Cork's Red FM.
Hello, 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 hello. Glad you joined us for the Big Red Bench on this glorious Easter Sunday evening. Hope you've all been enjoying the sun this bank holiday weekend. My name's Rory. I'm absolutely delighted that you've joined us for the Big Red Bench right here on Cork's Red FM. We have a packed hour of sport coming your way. Coming up tonight, we're going to hear from CJ Stander following his last game for Munster. We're going to talk to Moss Finn about that defeat to Toulouse, where Munster go from here, and the impact that Stander and the also retiring Billy Holland have had on the province. Reaction from Cove Ramblers defeat last night, going down 4-0 to UCD. And we're going to talk golf on the show this evening as well. Cork's John Murphy, selected on the Great Britain and Ireland team for the Walker Cup being held in Florida in May. We'll talk to him a little bit later on. You're listening to the Big Red Bench on Cork's Red FM. Oh, 868-104-106 if you'd like to get in touch with us on the show this evening. Going to wrap up all the day's action, and we'll start at Villa Park, where Fulham have gone a goal up on Aston Villa. Tom Gale.
Aston Villa 0, Fulham 1. As it stands, the visitors are climbing out of the bottom three, and it's Aleksandar Mitrovic with his first goal in 24 Premier League appearances. It came courtesy of a Tyrone Mings mistake. The defender with a poor back pass, the Serbian latched onto it, rounded the goalkeeper and slotted into an empty net. It's Aston Villa 0, Fulham 1.
As things stand, Fulham are out of the Premier League's relegation zone on goal difference. That's after Newcastle United fought back to get a 2-2 draw this afternoon against Tottenham. Stephen Goldsmith.
Newcastle 2, Spurs 2. Since talk started surfacing of Mourinho being under threat, Spurs quietly went about their business, winning 4-5, meaning a win today would have seen them move into a Champions League spot. But it's often one step forward and two back for Spurs. Despite Harry Kane having them in front with a brace turning round Joe Linton's opener, they couldn't hold on. Joe Willock, on loan from Arsenal, had the final say with a late equaliser. Newcastle 2, Spurs 2.
So a good point on paper for Newcastle. However, their boss Steve Bruce reckons they deserve more.
We're pleased, but in my opinion, it should have been 3 points. I thought we were the better side. It's as good as I've seen us play for a long, long time. We've done as well as we could have hoped. We're just disappointed that we haven't won it.
So that's Tottenham up to fifth. They could have gone into the top four with a win today. Boss Jose Mourinho not happy.
We should, and we come, of course, with the objective to win it. So not happy with the points. I don't want to go very deep on my analyse, because I feel that what I feel, what I think, what I want to say can only be in the dressing room.
In the early kickoff today, Southampton came from behind to beat Burnley. Alan Lewis was at St Mary's today.
It's finished Southampton 3, Burnley 2. A pulsating game of football. See Southampton come from 2 goals down to take all 3 points. Wood and Vidra had Burnley in control with goals in the first half, but Southampton got themselves level before the break thanks to goals from Armstrong and Danny Ings. The second half was just as lively. Ward-Prowse hit the bar. Armstrong was denied by a good save from Pope before Nathan Redmond volleyed Southampton in front for the first time in the game. Wood went close to equalising for Burnley, only to be denied by a point-blank save from Fraser Forster. This win should mean any relegation worries disappear for Southampton. It's finished Southampton 3, Burnley 2.
Yeah, so Southampton now 7 points clear of the relegation zone following that result today. Their boss Ralph Hasenhuttle very happy with what his players did for him today.
Yeah, I'm very, very happy to see things today, what we were working on the last 2 weeks, especially our decision making the final third was fantastic. I think we could score today 5, 6 or not even more goals, and this against a team that normally don't give you a lot of chances. I mean, that shows you that we have done something right in the last weeks.
One more game tonight. Manchester United in action against Brighton. 7:30, the kick-off time for that one. Peter Smith is at Old Trafford for us today.
A Europa League win still represents a realistic chance of silverware for Manchester United, but domestically, consolidating second position is as good as it's going to get realistically. United have won their last 5 successive meetings against Brighton, who've hit form with back-to-back wins. Their previous 3-0 success over Newcastle, arguably proving their most comprehensive display of the campaign. At Old Trafford, it's Manchester United against Brighton.
Yeah, 7:30, the kickoff time for that one this evening. Elsewhere today in rugby, and also continuing there a bit for a first ever Challenge Cup title tonight there at the Stoop as they take on Harlequins in the last 16. That one kicking off at 8 p.m. The winner will progress to a quarter final against Northampton Saints. In the last 16 of the Champions Cup, Racing 92 hammering Edinburgh today. 56-3 was how that finished. They'll face Bordeaux in the next round. They beat Bristol 36 points to 17 in France today. Elsewhere, Sale Sharks are in action against Scarlets at the moment. Sale leading 13 points to nil there. Half an hour on the clock. The winner of that game will face Ronan O'Gara's La Rochelle. Golf, Leona Maguire preparing for a final round at the ANA Inspiration. The Cavan native will tee off from 200 par at about 6:45 Irish time. 12 shots off the pace that's being held by Thailand's Paddy Tavantakit. Stephanie Meadow meanwhile resume from 1 under in about half an hour's time. 3-time major champion Jordan Spieth holding the share of the lead at the Valero Texas Open. He's 12 under par alongside England's Matt Wallace. Graham McDowell 2 under par through 7 in his final round. Paddy Harrington 2 over after his 2 holes today. And trainer Willie Mullins enjoying a 1-2-3 in the Gold Cup novice steeplechase at Ferry House, where the Easter Festival got underway today. His Jana Dill was guided to victory by Jodie McGarvery after going off at a starting price at 12-1 ahead of stablemates Franco Deport and Asterion Furlong. Right, we are going to kick off the show tonight with rugby and Munster's defeat yesterday in the Champions Cup, losing to Toulouse. Moss Finn going to be on the line very shortly to talk about the game. First though, the reaction to CJ Stander, his last game. He was captain yesterday before he heads back to South Africa, announcing his retirement a couple of weeks back. This is him speaking to the Munster website.
I'm proud of the boys. I'm proud of the effort we put in. Look, it was a tough week, very, very tough week to come back from a loss like that, and to get in a performance like that, you can see the squad really dug deep. And we have a special coaching staff and the backroom staff that pushed the team during the week and just kept a positive vibe. And you can see today, we came out firing. We weren't lucky with a few calls, but we scored some brilliant tries. And what a way to step back, you know. And if we would have got the win, I don't think anything would have changed for me, really, because I'm still proud of the team and I'm proud of the effort. I think we gave it our best chance. We really stuck it to them, but we were just unlucky with a few calls. And yeah, going to miss this place, man. It's, yeah, just before I arrived here, I remember watching a European game here, and I think we were playing Edinburgh, but just had flags in the tunnel, and the TV was, camera was that angle, and I was just sitting at home and thinking, I would love to run out here. Sorry. I would love to run out here one day, and yeah, today was special. To be captain of a side like this would have been great to get some silverware, but it's not to be for me or Billy. But they are going to get some silverware, and I can't wait to sit in the stand and the full 26,000 and watch that happen.
You can hear just how much it means for him to be part of the Munster experience after yesterday's game. Very emotional. CJ Stander there speaking to the Munster website after yesterday's defeat to Toulouse. Now, for more on it, I spoke to our rugby analyst and Munster legend himself, Moss Finn, earlier on today. Okay, for more on Munster's defeat yesterday, joined on the line now by our good friend Moss Finn. Moss, a cracker of a game yesterday in Thomond Park, but Toulouse just that little bit better.
I agree, Rory. Absolutely. A great game, a fantastic match. We played exceptionally well, and, you know, given the previous week against Leinster where we didn't fire a bullet, it was a refreshing change and wonderful entertainment. The old Munster was back again, and we could have won it perhaps with a little bit of luck, but, you know, overall, perhaps the better team won, and the team with probably a little bit more quality.
What was the main difference in Munster's approach yesterday than the game against Leinster last week?
Extraordinary. I think they were obviously backed into a corner after that, and they were, you know, they were definitely firing on all cylinders yesterday. Their approach was kind of do or die, I'd say. It was going to be, you know, the last match of the season. We played very badly. We never came out of the dressing room last week. Let's do something. And, you know, I suppose being at home in Thomond Park and all that might have changed things a little bit. But I'd say they were very disappointed the previous week where, you know, they didn't mind being beaten perhaps, but they certainly didn't mind being beaten the way they were beaten. Or they certainly minded being beaten the way they were beaten. They played very poorly the previous week. So they came out firing on all cylinders with a slightly different approach, and they were a little bit more positive. So all in all, they were well revved up for it.
Yeah, because like the criticism obviously stung last week because it came in quite heavy and quite thick from everyone, and they were fired up, and they were a completely different team. And I suppose, as you say, backed into a corner, had to do something else, and they gave a great performance.
Indeed, and it was difficult because the way they started, Toulouse really came out of the blocks quickly and dominated the possession the first 15 or 20 minutes, and Munster had their backs to the wall, and I was moving around in the chair thinking, like, this is it, we're going to get hockeyed again. But no, they got going and they scored two brilliant tries through Keith Earls and played fantastic rugby against a real quality team. Mm. And barring a few mistakes, we could have carried it on in the second half. But like it was great that they had been on the ropes for 20 minutes and then turned it with two great Earls tries, two bits of magic, and turned the whole game on its head and, you know, went in at halftime winning by 7 points. And I honestly felt we had a chance of doing it after that, but that was not to be. It was probably a step too far.
And the try from Antoine Dupont yesterday, Moss, looked like there was a knock on, and Wayne Barnes had a big chat with his team about it, but decided to award the try. Were you surprised that he awarded that?
A bit, like it probably came off his head the second one, you know, it was, but I think the damage was done with the Lebel try before that when Hanrahan was missed, you know, that really put the icing on the cake. It was a terrible mistake by Hanrahan for Dupont's try, you know, he was wrong footed on the other side. So both those tries were killers. Like the knock on could have gone our way, but you know, it was well adjudicated, and perhaps the 7 points were worth it because I felt it came off his head, you know. Mm. But the mistake for the other try was the one that really killed us. Hanrahan was terribly naive to do what he did at that level. You never come up square on someone, but you can be beaten both sides, and he was very naive in defence there. And like it kind of sums up his career to a degree, and I don't like being too critical of a fella, but he does a lot of good things. He made one or two sort of line breaks there, and next thing he misses a pass or a very easy tackle. He can be a little bit flaky, unfortunately, and I think that's what really cost us.
Bit of bad luck as well, I suppose, Mossman. Like, you're missing Peter O'Mahony yesterday, and then like Chris Farrell goes off injured in the fourth minute. That's kind of luck you can't really account for, I guess, in games like that.
Yeah, and the big one at halftime was we went in having done very well to come back into the match and go in leading at halftime, and Byrne got injured just before halftime, and he was an incalculable loss. Like, he's one of, we have about four or five world-class players, and he's one of them. And him going off was a big loss going into the second half, and that's where you need luck. Peter Manny's leadership, obviously, ability there as well. And, you know, the fact that we didn't have the 16th man there with the crowd as well, it all went against us. But having said that, and I was, you know, it was a joy to see such a team. We were playing against a very much a quality team in Toulouse, in that, like, they had five or six forwards there: Marchant, the captain, number two, the two Arnolds, Keno, the ex All Black. Mm-hmm. Like, you're talking real quality. And then they had the subtlety of the backs. I mean, the French can combine grunt and subtlety in the same breath, and that's a very difficult combination to beat, you know. And I think at the end of the day, without getting too analytical, that we have never really replaced Ronan O'Gara.
Yeah.
At this point in time, Joey Carberry is a bit undercooked, so I wouldn't be too critical of him. He probably needs around 10 or 12 games to get up to speed, but having said that, you could see the difference yesterday between, like, Murray was excellent, don't get me wrong, but Carberry is undercooked, and Entomac orchestrated everything for them. And I feel if we had an O'Gara there at some stages, he'd put us into the right positions in the field, would have been a little bit more clever in his distribution. They're just small little things that Entomac had and did. He did some very subtle kicks ahead. You know, it was that little bit of quality we were lacking, and I think until such time as Carberry comes up to speed and we get a player of that quality playing 10, that we won't be able to match the best in Europe again.
Where does this leave Munster now, Moss, and where's Munster standing, I suppose, in the bigger picture following yesterday's defeat and the defeat last week?
Well, you'll be a lot happier looking into the future at what happened yesterday. Mm-hmm. The previous week was very, it would leave you very low, but I would suggest that Munster lack real class. at the very top level, and that's what hurts them. We can get to semi-finals, we can do okay in the Pro 14, but we're lacking that little bit of top quality to go in against the likes of Leicester or Toulouse at the very top end of the game. So hopefully we can develop a few homegrown fellas like that, rather than going off and buying Detroit, I don't know, for whatever they were saying the money is, 650,000 or something, and move forward. So I think we're in a good place, and we're unearthing a good few locals, like that lad Coombs now is fantastic. We have a Heron coming, and you have the Witcherleys. But at the end of the day, we have to, if we can unearth, if Carberry comes good at 10, I think we can look forward with confidence, because we have plenty of players. I would suggest in the long term, I wouldn't be happy with Van Graan, because he coaches like a South African. He's quite pedantic. Everything is too predictable in what he does, you know. So I would be hoping that we might get a slightly more revolutionary type coach that might be able to make us look like Toulouse in the long run with that blend of grunt and class. I mean, it was wonderful watching Toulouse there in full flow yesterday, offloading and in tackles, free-flowing running, stepping with the outside backs there. I mean, that's something that I would like to see. I don't think we'll see that from a South African coach. I think we'd have to go further afield and get someone with a little bit more sort of openness to the running game, you know.
Well, at the very least, you'd hope you'd have them playing like they did yesterday on a more regular basis next season, I guess.
You would, and I think we can, and we have the quality in certain areas, but we just need the general to set it off, and Carberry might well evolve into that. Like Earls is still very good and good in attack, and your man De Allende in the centre, they showed passages where he could be very good, but he wasn't in evidence in the second half because we didn't quite get the forward ball and Carberry was tiring. So like there are great portents for the future, but I would just like to perhaps to see a little slightly different administration, you know?
Is Van Graan under pressure, do you think?
I would say he is, but he's contracted, so I don't know. It all depends on money. And like, he's still a very good coach, don't get me wrong, but I don't think we can go to the next level with him. That's my point, because he's too predictable. I'd be hoping perhaps that we get maybe, you know, even like if if Stephen Larcombe, the offensive coach there, maybe he gets more of a say.
Yeah.
It might help, because he was a very good number 10 himself, you know. But having said that, like the thing about old halves, you can tell them all what to do, but you can never tell them when to do it. You need the guy you need a guy like O'Gara to get in there, you know. It was great to see him advancing as well there with La Rochelle the night before.
He's certainly doing his coaching CV nothing bad at all. I mean, he's been fantastic with La Rochelle. I think a lot of Munster fans would be very, very happy indeed to see him take over the hot seat at Munster.
They would, and he's probably, that would be his aspiration in the long term, I'd imagine, and even to be the goal of Ireland in the long term. Mm-hmm. But he's got a long way to go before that, I'd say. He sees himself as that is his final push, I'd imagine, when he's finishing up. So I'd say that it'll be a while yet, you know. But he certainly has the pedigree by travelling to, you know, New Zealand there and getting experience with Crusaders. That was a huge learning curve for him. He's been number two, he's been number three in different places, attack coach, defensive coach. He's been the assistant coach. But this is his first job at the front level as the number one. And like, he's done exceptionally well. So it would be great to see him as the guru of Munster and Ireland in the long term. But I'd say that's not for him yet.
A couple of Munster players saying goodbye as well yesterday, Moss. We'll talk about CJ Standard shortly. But what can you say about Billy Holland, his contribution to Munster over the last, 15, 16 years?
Well, he's what you would describe as the essence of Munster. And in that he's homegrown, you know, CBC, Constitution, one cap for Ireland there against Canada, which he richly deserved. But he's been the essence of Munster, I would describe it, for 10, 12, you know, nearly 15 years. And it is an emotional send-off for him. It was a pity we didn't win for him. And you saw, like, he was still at a very high standard. When he came in and said at Tyburn there yesterday, our line-out wasn't diminished. His leadership skills in the line-outs were shown again. And I'd be always in favour of fellas like him in Munster, like you have the Witcheries and the Coombs coming. But it was he set the tone for that. And it was great to see Indigenous talent last so long within our club. You know, you obviously have to buy in sometimes, do not to go up to speed to this top level, but Billy was one of our own, and did us proud in every way, on and off the field. A smashing fella. And, you know, his father was the same before him, and the great servant of Irish rugby. And it was great to see it continued on by Billy. And I wish him well in his retirement, because he was one of the greats and one of the great fellas off the field as well as on it.
And great to see him go out on his own terms as well, because as he said, when he announced his retirement, he's seen players play on past their sell-by date and they just kind of fade away into obscurity. And he didn't want to do that. And that deserves tremendous credit, I think.
Absolutely. And I agree. And he's cute enough that way. And he's fit enough to go out at the top. Whether he'll play a bit for Cork Constitution or not, I don't know. But like, that level of rugby yesterday is a very high level of rugby. And you need to be fit, very fit and strong. So I'm glad he went in his own terms, and you wouldn't like to see him languishing there and getting dropped and things like that going forward, because he doesn't deserve that because of what he's given to Munster. And he's appreciated to that. When you see a fella leaving at his best, it's a lot better. Mm.
And JJ Hanrahan playing his last game for Munster as well yesterday. I always get the sense with JJ, it's kind of like unfulfilled potential a little bit.
It is, and like I say there, he was stepped by a man which caused, you know, Dupont's try, which was probably losing the match, but it contributed certainly. But he's an amazing player, a fantastic talent, and I wish him well in Claremont, you know. And it's a shame to see Indigenous talent going, I accept that, but, you know, Foley probably never gave him his break when he was at his peak, and like that was when he was at his best. But I'm not too sure he's quite the finished deal, you see. That's the thing. He's a great player, does a lot of great things, but he can do a knack. And if you have a player at 10 who can make a mistake that can be fatal, it's like a goalkeeper in soccer. It's not the position to be if you're prone to that. Like, he's all the ability, but, you know, would you stand him in front of the goalpost to win a match with a kick from 50 yards or 30 yards? You know, whereas O'Gara would get it. You'd be wondering, would Hanrahan get it? that's the difference. A great talent, but is he good enough to stay with us? I don't think so, and I wish him well in Claremont.
And finally, what's there to be said that hasn't been said about CJ Stander already? Captain yesterday, another great performance, an emotional day for him, and he will be sorely missed.
Again, a man going out in his prime, you know, like a guy who left South Africa because they wanted him to play number two. They said he was too small for a back row. He came over here, Munster took him on. He got great friends here, great respect. He showed great professionalism. He brought a lot of people, learned a lot from him. A wonderful player, like, for a man who was, you know, he's only about 6'1", but he punches way above his weight, and he's carried a lot of ball for Munster over the years. And he's carried a lot of ball for Ireland over the years against bigger opposition. But he never goes back. He plays on the gain line. He's given wonderful service, and he's very much appreciated for that. And again, he's leaving in his pomp, and I think maybe that's a good thing. His legacy will be there, and he'll be fondly remembered here for the rest of his life, that's for sure.
He certainly will be. Boss Flynn, as always, a pleasure. Thank you very much for joining us on the Big Red Bench today.
No problem, all. Excellent.
Always a pleasure talking to Moss Finn on the Big Red Bench. It's been great to be in his company over the last couple of weeks, talking Champions Cup and the Six Nations as well. So always great to hear from the legendary Moss Finn. And disappointing, I suppose, for CJ Stander to lose yesterday and not get some silverware in his final season, as he said in that clip that we heard from just before we heard from Moss. But look, a fantastic career in a red shirt. Himself and Billy Holland have given some tremendous service to the Reds, and I hope they certainly enjoyed their retirement, and I hope their families enjoy having them back full time, because as we heard from Billy Holland a couple of weeks back, it won't be taking up so much time, and it'd be fantastic for family life for them not to have to I suppose have rugby be their main source of time drain, I suppose. So fantastic for them, fantastic for their families. Wish them very, very, the very, very best of luck in their retirements. Alright, when we went into that bit with Moss Finn, Fulham were a goal up away to Aston Villa. However,
Aston Villa 3, Fulham 1, and it's the England striker Ollie Watkins who looks to have put this one beyond doubt for Dean Smith's men. It was good work from Bertrand Traore on the right-hand side, dancing into the box. His cross laid it on a plate for the man who hasn't scored in 11 Premier League appearances. It's his 11th goal of the season to make it Aston Villa 3, Fulham 1.
Time nearly up there in that game. Disappointing night, I should say, for Cove Ramblers. They've now lost their opening two games in the SSC Airtricity League. First First Division, going down 4-0 CCD at St. Comyn's Park last night, coupled with the defeat to Cork City on opening night. This was Stuart Ashton's reaction when speaking to the assembled media afterwards.
No, obviously we didn't want that result. Again, disappointing. Obviously we didn't show up tonight. It was as simple as that. The display was poor and we got punished for it. Up until the goal, we're in the game, obviously. I think probably edging it. I thought we had spells where we're the better side. But then the goal then, as we've conceded, and then we've fell apart, basically. We've lost a bit of organisation. And unfortunately, one or two players lost their discipline as well.
They seem to get a grip after that first goal, and you never could quite get it back in midfield.
No, again, you know, as you say, the first goal, obviously, we haven't reacted to that. Not just in midfield, as you're saying, but all over. Again, it was a game of, for me anyway, I thought it was a game of where they picked up all the second balls, and we were second best to that. And that dictated it from there, and they, in fairness to them, they showed a bit of, obviously going 1-0 up, they had the bit of space and, you know, the bit of freedom to play, but we didn't track that back and we didn't chase them down, and we got punished for it again then. Yeah, that's what we have to sit down now and look at. Obviously we'll look over the analysis and that, and the players obviously have to have their opinion as well on it, and we'll sit down and hopefully work that out. Just tonight, I just thought we didn't, as you said, we didn't do what we are capable of doing, and we got punished for it. We have to pick ourselves up, dust ourselves off, and we have to get back to knowing, playing the way we know we can play, which is way better than what we showed tonight. You know, everyone's saying it, that this league is a hard league to win games and to get out of. And as you say, results shown already that it's going to be hard. We know that, and we have to be up for that. Tonight we weren't up for it for some reason. We were second best to everything, and we got punished for that.
That's Stuart Ashton there, Cole Ramner, speaking after their defeat last night to UCD. 4-0 was how it went down last night, and Cole Ramner's now bottom of the table after the opening two games, not where they would have imagined to have been, but a disappointing night for them last night, and they'll have a week now to dust themselves off and come back and regroup. But two defeats on the bounce now for Ramblers, and fingers crossed they get back to winning ways sooner rather than later. Right, still to come on the show, we are going to talk golf next. We're going to talk to the Corkman who's been selected on the Walker Cup team.
The Big Red Bench, Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Cork's Red FM.
Rory here with you until 7 o'clock. Glad you could join us for the Big Red Bench this evening. Hope you're all full of Easter eggs and enjoying the show on this Sunday evening. Glorious Sunday evening as well, weather-wise. Fantastic weekend here in Cork. When the sun is shining in Cork, there is no better place in the world to be. And again, there's no better place in the world than Cork, regardless, anyway, is there? All right, we're going to talk golf. Actually, full time from that Premier League game. Whistle just gone. Aston Villa 3, Fulham 1. Good win for Aston Villa there, coming from behind to win by 3-1, thanks to 2 goals from Trezeguet and a late goal from Ollie Watkins. Manchester United and Brighton still to come. That is kicking off in an hour's time. But it was confirmed earlier this week that Cork's John Murphy was selected on the Great Britain and Ireland team for the Walker Cup, which is being held in Seminole in Florida in May. I spoke to the Kinsale man about being selected, studying in the States, life in the States during a pandemic, thoughts of turning pro, and more. Okay, we're joined on the line now by John Murphy following the announcement that he's made the Walker Cup team. First off, John, thanks very much for taking the call. Amazing news, congratulations. What was your reaction when you found out?
Thank you, yeah. I was in the middle of a tournament, so it was a bit weird. We just played the second round of a tournament, and you know, I kind of knew that that the team was close to being selected. So I found out after the second round of the tournament, so it kind of took away from my focus on the tournament. It was a great phone call to get. I probably wish I got it after the tournament, so I could have focused on that instead. But no, it was certainly an email I'll never forget reading. He was actually trying to get on to me during the day, the captain of the team, to tell me that I'd made the team, and he couldn't get on to me because I was playing this tournament. So I feel a bit bad that I didn't even answer the phone call to say that I was selected. But yeah, no, it was certainly a day I'll never forget, and yeah, I'm really looking forward to getting down there.
I'm pretty sure playing golf was a good enough reason not to answer the phone call, to be honest.
Yeah, none of our things.
What is the, I suppose, the selection procedure? What's the process for getting on the Walker Cup team?
So basically, it's just the 10 best amateur golfers in Great Britain and Ireland, and yeah, it's just whoever's playing the best golf and whoever they think will represent GB, you know, the best to take on the USA. It's, you know, throughout the years, there's been some great names play the Walker Cup. You know, the likes of Rory McIlroy, Shane Lowry, all them have gone through the ranks and played the Walker Cup. So yeah, it's certainly a great thing to be associated with and to be able to play and to represent Great Britain and Ireland. And yeah, we have two Irish on it, myself and Mark Power from Kilkenny. So myself and Mark will be great friends. So I'm looking forward to getting down there with him and hopefully teeing it up with him in the foursomes pairing.
I was going to say, how good is it to have someone like that in the team that you know very, very well, and will probably make things a bit easier for you, I'd imagine.
Yeah, it'll be great. The first time I ever played for Ireland, I played foursomes with Mark Power. So, you know, it's just cool to think that we've come this far since then and that we've achieved, you know, so much since then. So, yeah, we've been talking about it since, you know, we still have, like, screenshots and pictures of us playing underage. So we were sending them to each other. It was gas. But, yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun to tee it up with him. And, yeah, I think we've both agreed already that it's going to be fairly nerve-wracking. So it's good that we'll be there for each other.
And do you know many of the other lads? Have you played against them?
Yeah, I'd say I've played with all of them at some point. Everybody on the team's very sound, and I think there'll be a lot of team chemistry there. We all get on pretty well. A lot of them, I think six of them are in college over here, so I'd know them through college and just through playing again underage against them and with them and stuff. So yeah, it's gonna be a lot of fun to get together on the 30th of April and start off the week.
You would have been close enough to being on the team 2 years ago, I guess. Were you disappointed not to get on it then?
Yeah, I was, to be honest, I was probably on the team at the start of the year in 2019, and I just didn't go my way that year. I didn't have a great year, and I probably focused too much on making the team that year because, you know, as I said, at the start of the year, I would have been in a great position to make it, and just kind of played my way off it, to be honest, and it was obviously very disappointing. So I think this time around, I just focused more on staying in the present and being mindful of that and not focusing too much on the Walker Cup. And, you know, in the end of the day, something I worked on with my coaching in Stafford is just good golf takes care of everything. So if I could stay in the present and take care of good golf and just play well, then, you know, everything else will take care of itself. So I think I did a much better job of that this time around. And yeah, I'm delighted to getting the team this time around.
So talk to us about the year that you've had that's gotten you onto the Walker Cup team and how well you've played.
Yeah, it's been strange because I went back last March straight after a college event, and obviously COVID hit, so I was at home practicing in the garden and stuff and just trying to make the most of what I had in Ireland at the time. And then I came back to America in about July and started playing competitive golf again, and thankfully I've been playing pretty consistently. I've, you know, had some nice finishes. There was one event, the Jones Cup Invitational, which was, you know, that was a really big event for getting selected for the Walker Cup, because everybody, all the American squad and all the GB and I squad were playing this event. So I knew that was an important event going into it, and I tried not to pile pressure on myself, but it was still always going to be in the back of my mind that, you know, this could have a lot to do with the Walker Cup. So I was delighted to play well there. I think I was 50th after the first round, and I think I pushed my way up to 6th in the end. So that was certainly a big result for me in the scheme of things. And then I came second last week at a tournament down in Myrtle Beach, which was another big result for me.
So we're about 5-6 weeks away now from the event itself. Do you have much tournaments to play beforehand?
Yeah, we have two big events here with the college. We have one event down in Texas next week and another one in Georgia in a few weeks. So I just kind of have to turn my attention to them, and as I was talking about, just trying to be present for the next while and not be thinking too much about the Walker Cup for now. So yeah, I just have to do what I can to get prepared for my next event, and just, you know, I'm just trying to take it day by day for now. That's something I've worked on, is just doing all I can today to get that a little bit better. So that's all I'm doing for now.
Obviously you're in college as well while all this is going on at the University of Louisville. What's it like combining study and high level golf that takes up quite a lot of your time?
Well, yeah, I'll be honest, last year I got my degree in marketing, and I just kind of decided this year I wanted to focus on golf. So I asked my academic advisor just to throw me the easiest classes he can, and thankfully he did that. So I'd be lying if I said there was a lot of study going on the side. So I'm enjoying that aspect of just not having to stress too much about school for a change.
So does that kind of coincide with your good form this year, and that you don't have to worry too much about your college classes?
Yeah, certainly. It's like, you know, you're going to tournaments. I remember last year going to tournaments and I was having to write 60-page papers and whatnot, and I was going to tournaments coming off the golf course and thinking, oh, I have to do this now, or I have to, you know, submit this assignment later. So that's what I'm doing now is, just before I go to tournaments, I'm just getting all my work done for that week, because it only takes a couple hours. So I'm just getting all that done before I go to tournaments, so that when I'm at the tournament, I'm fully present and I can focus on that. And it certainly eases the stress levels.
Irish people, I suppose, when they think of college in America, they think of what college life is like in the movies. How close has it been to that for you? Is it in any way similar?
Yeah, certainly. It's not too different, in all honesty. Yeah, there's, you know, all the frat parties and whatnot that go on. And this year has obviously been a little different. You know, I've just kind of been trying to do my own thing. Just because of the fear of COVID and, you know, having to make people quarantine and stuff if you're not careful. So I've just kind of been trying to do my own thing and just focus on golf. And I think that's been certainly to the benefit of my golf this year. So I might try and continue doing that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, what's it been like, I suppose, living in the States throughout COVID? Cause, I mean, like, we all know this, like, how badly America has been hit with COVID-19 over the last year. I mean, like, what was it like for you?
In all honesty, selfishly, it's been pretty good. I mean, I've been able to travel and play golf, and that's all I could really ask for. And I actually got COVID last August, the day before, or a couple of days before. I was meant to fly to the US Amateur, which is one of the biggest events in the world. So I unfortunately had to pull out of that. But since then, even since I got COVID, it hasn't, you know, I haven't been as worried about it, or I haven't been as kind of cautious. I mean, I'm obviously still taking the precautions that I have to make sure I don't get it again. But it certainly eased me a little bit to, you know, be able to travel freely and be able to play tournaments. I haven't been as worried about it. So living in America here at the moment, it's that COVID doesn't exist, which is, in one sense, it's kind of nice, because I'm able to, as I said, play golf, which is all I could ask for.
Did COVID hit you quite badly? Are you suffering any long-term effects from it?
No, I lost my taste and smell for a while, but it's gradually been coming back. And I had a cough, and other than that, no, it was fine. There was three of us in my house got it, and we all kind of had the same symptoms. And thankfully, we're all 20, 21, 22, so it didn't affect us too badly. And I don't think we gave it to anybody else either. So it could have been a lot worse.
This year's World Cup being held in Seminole, in Florida. Is that a course you know well?
I played it for the first time a few weeks ago. I went down after a tournament I had, and just went down and practiced it for a few days, because as part of the GB and I squad, you had free access to it. So I went down and played it a few times, and it's just an amazing place. It's kind of hard to describe, but it's just very unique, and it's certainly a very prestigious place to be able to play. So I'm looking forward to the matches being held there. It's going to be a very interesting venue for the matches, and it's going to be right on the coast as well, so it'll be nice and windy, so there's no excuse for the GB and I boys not to be able to match up.
Yeah, you're well used to that being from Kinsale, I guess, but yeah. How does the...
That's what I'm saying, I came over here to get out of that and now I'm back into it.
How does the course, I suppose, match your strengths? I mean, like, how does it suit your eye?
I like it. I mean, it's pretty open. It suits people who can hit it pretty far. So I'm looking forward to just being able to try hit it as hard as I can around there. That's always fun. But it's a really nice course. It's open. It's going to be tough going into the greens. You know, you have to be very particular about where you're placing the ball going into the greens. So I think that's something that we're going to have to get a good week of work on in before we play the actual event. Because obviously, coming from GB and I, we wouldn't be as used to that style of golf. So that's something that we're certainly going to have to work on and look into. But as I said, I mean, we're going to be obvious underdogs going into the game, but I'm looking forward to trying to get a few scalps along the way.
The US team came over 2 years ago and won. Is there kind of a sense of you're looking for revenge going into this match now in a couple of weeks' time?
Yeah, absolutely. The US team hadn't won on GB and I soil, I think, since 2007. So they won for the first time there in 12 years. And we haven't, I don't think we have won. I think it's been 20 years. I think 2001, I want to say, is the last time GB and I have won on US soil. So as I said, we're going to be underdogs, but that's all. I think that's going to make it more enjoyable. I love that kind of element of it. So I'm looking forward to trying to turn a few heads and a few people up.
Yeah, have the US named their team actually yet?
They have named their team. Yeah, they're strong. There's no sugarcoating it. They're going to be really good. And again, I'm looking forward to that element of it. You know, I know all the US team that are playing. I know I've played with most of them before. They're going to be a really good side and they're going to be tough to beat, but that's again going to add to my enjoyment of it, so I'm looking forward to taking them on.
Obviously, I suppose pre-COVID, I mean, like, your family and friends might have gone over to watch you play in the Walker Cup. That's probably not going to be the case this time around. Is that going to be an issue? Is that going to affect the GB and I team heading into this match?
Yeah, obviously having support is always nice, and even having your parents there or whatnot to share the occasion with, you know, my mum and dad have gone to everything they could have in the past, and you know, I'm sure they wouldn't have wanted to miss this for the world, and I'm disappointed that they're going to miss it, but hopefully it'll be on TV and they can enjoy it that way. But yeah, it's certainly going to be a bit different, and not having my family there to share this occasion with, but hopefully we'll be able to get in the right side of a few Americans. They tend to like us Irish people anyway, so hopefully we'll get in the right side and cheer us on.
Yeah, and hopefully everyone from the golf club back home will be able to watch, and hopefully they'll be able to play at home as well by that time as well.
They should be able to, I hope.
And I suppose turning professional then has to be a thought in the back of your mind. I mean, like, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm trying not to think about it too much, but at the same time, you have to kind of get stuff done now in terms of, you know, finding management companies and stuff like that is very important to be able to be ready to turn professional when you want to. So I've kind of been working on that the last while, and I think it'll be at some point this year. I haven't really decided when, but it'll be over summer, I would guess. So yeah, we'll just take it day by day for now, try to perform as well as I can as an amateur, and then hopefully that will give me more opportunities as a professional when I do turn.
Yeah, and winning the Walker Cup would be a nice way to kind of round off the amateur career, right, wouldn't it?
Absolutely, yeah, 100%. It'd be nice to be a part of a winning Walker Cup team, not to mind just being on the team.
All right, John, thanks so much for talking to us on the Big Red Bench today, buddy. And very, very best of luck. We'll be keeping an eye on you in that Walker Cup match in a couple of weeks' time, and we'll try and talk to you afterwards.
Perfect. Thank you so much for having me on. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, really enjoy that chat with John Murphy. Congratulations indeed to him for being named on that Great Britain and Ireland team for the Walker Cup. Big, big achievement for John. He's one of five Cork men to have made the Walker Cup team. James Sugrue, Owen O'Connell, John McHenry and Jimmy Bruin, the men before him as well. So congratulations indeed to John. Fantastic achievement, and I'm sure he's going to be a huge success as a professional as well, and looking forward to watching that Walker Cup match early in May. And should be a fantastic achievement, and fingers crossed John will be part of a victorious team that weekend. Alright, full time report from Villa Park, where Aston Villa have come from behind to beat Fulham. Tom Gale.
Aston Villa 3, Fulham 1. The visitors were looking good to move out the bottom 3. Just after an hour, Alexandra Mitrovic punishing Tyrone Mings' weak back pass to score. Credit Dean Smith's second half subs though. Trezeguet Brace turned the game around, his second courtesy of Tosin's error this time, following good work from Keane and Davies. Ollie Watkins' late tap-in ended his run of 7 games without a goal. Who needs Jack Grealish, eh? Full-time, Aston Villa 3, Fulham 1.
So that means Fulham are in the relegation zone, 3 points behind Newcastle, but Newcastle have played a game less as well. So bottom three, Fulham, West Brom and Sheffield United, and Newcastle breathing a sigh of relief that Aston Villa did them a favour today. Elsewhere, Manchester United and Brighton kicking off at 7:30. Team sheets are in at Old Trafford. Peter Smith has assigned them.
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer makes 4 changes to the side that lost their FA Cup quarter-final tie at Leicester. Returning are Shaw, Cavani, Rashford and Fernandez, with Matic and Van de Beek dropping to the bench. Martial is injured. Telles misses out altogether. For Brighton, Graham Potter, having seen his team comprehensively sweep aside Newcastle, understandably names an unchanged team. At Old Trafford, it's Manchester United against Brighton.
7:30 the kick-off time for that one. Brighton 6 points clear of the relegation zone, heading into that game. They play 2 games less than Fulham as well. Manchester United in second place, looking to secure Champions League football for next season, and they get a win today would be a huge step in that direction. But 7:30 the kickoff time at Old Trafford for that game. Now we're going to talk about brand partnerships and players and the opportunity they have to earn money off their brand and their profile, and indeed promoting on social media as well. Trevor Tramley is the co-founder of Sport Endorse, which is a sports management agency, and Valerie has been speaking to him about what players, I suppose, are worth in those kind of terms, and how they're paid to promote items on social media and all that. So really interesting conversation with Trevor, who first described what Sports Endorse is all about.
Yeah, but look, Sport Endorse is a full-service sports representation business. We look after an athlete's contract, their endorsements. If they need to boost their profile, we do that. We have a traditional business, and then we have a platform. Our traditional business, we do rugby contracts for rugby players. We do football contracts for footballers. The larger endorsements, we do that. That's the kind of pick up the phone, big contracts kind of stuff. That's the traditional business. And then our platform, which we went live with at Christmas, Valerie, is available in 120 countries. Athletes can download it on their phone and all those in app format in all those countries. There's over 800 athletes on it now, 120 companies, 10 athletes a day signing up to it. And what that does is it connects athletes with brands and opportunities. It gives them an opportunity to get business via posts or by doing motivational talks on Zoom. And there's a whole lot of services on that. And I suppose our business represents athletes, sports organizations and rights holders, but there's a lot more than that. Like, we're selling a pro cycling team from South Africa and Team Quebec ASOS. We're helping local organizations as well in Ireland. And yeah, we have footballers from Treban, NFL, NBA guys on the platform, John Egan from Cork, Stroke Kerry on the platform. We've Premier League footballers, we've hurlers, we've camogie players, we've Aussie rules players, and we're very proud of what we've achieved so far. And they can filter down age, female, male, sport, rugby, football, guy, it doesn't really matter. And yeah, and it's so easy to use. So yeah.
Great. Well, that is Sport Endorse. But the reason I wanted to chat to you this week is because I did see a piece in the Irish Times with Eamon O'Donoghue, right? He had an article about how social media is helping the amateur player maybe to get some extra money on the side by brand partnerships, as you mentioned, and paid content promoted on their social media accounts. And this seems to be the way forward. I mean, I follow a lot of GA players and I know that I've seen them promoting things from, I don't know, if, as you said, if it's nutritional bars and maybe some of them get company cars. But isn't it amazing how an amateur player now has been spotted by companies and getting money? And I think even some of the figures that were revealed to us in the paper were, I think it set people shocked. And I'm like, more power to them. These players are doing this for entertainment. I'm like, if you get 1500 euros for posting Instagram, more power to you. That's what I feel. But I know there's people out there that go, no.
Most of the response has been positive to it, right? It's we're not suggesting that players get paid to play in Croke Park. That's not what we're suggesting. That's not what it's about. I mean, our GA players have high engagement. You know, that means our fans, their friends are fanatical about them. Someone like Ozzy Gleason or Kieran Donaghy, their percentage of their engagement is 20-30%. Is because they watch what they do. They love them. Same with the camogie and the football and the female side, very high engagement and they're valuable. So we're saying that all athletes, Olympians, can get a few bob for their posts. Why can't our GA players? And it's happening. It's going on. It's about GA players being able to know what they're worth as well, and we can help with that. We can tell them what their value is, what to be charging, what to be I see it all the time. We have companies offering products to our hurlers and our footballers, and it might be a protein bar worth a euro, but the post is worth 1500 euros. So I'm telling GAA players out there to sign up to Sport Endorse. We'll teach you how to get your few quid and how to value yourself, and you might get the protein bar as well with the money, you know.
Tell us how much these players are earning. Come on, this is what we want to know, Trevor. This is the nitty gritty.
Well, look, that we I suppose know. The article was just suggesting that, I'm not going to name and shame, but I'm going to tell you what people are worth. The article was suggesting what they can command, right? And that's the same with Evan Engram or Tory Craig in the NBA. Like, it's the same. If they have 70,000 followers, they're also able to get that money. But, you know, someone like Kieran Donaghy, his post would be worth 1,365 euro. That's his value. If it's a story, he could be getting a third of that. Ozzy Gleason, you know, 940 euro for a post. A story, a third of that. Lee Keegan, 10% engagement, 900 euro. Brendan Maher, 785 euro. Michael Murphy, Donegal, 690 euro. Killian O'Connor, Mayo, 670. Shane Walsh, 600. Darren O'Sullivan, Kerry, 550. Nicky the Badger, Burke, 450. I mean, like, this is what they're worth based on my calculations. It's not, we're not teaching anybody anything new here. This is what the value is. Jane Drury, 7.
We could be reading numbers all day.
We could, like, it's not. I just asked Manav to give me, prepare me for a few of them, and you know, it's about educating them and not taking advantage of our players. That's really what it's about here, and you know, and yeah, and what's wrong with them earning a few quid for on you know, to, and as well as that, it's helping them build their brand, right? It's helping them learn how to be commercial, how to be, because they're not always going to be playing, so to be able to know their value, know their worth. And there's a bit of education for that. So they, you know, it could be post-career, a little sideline business for them too. And so build your brand. Someone told me one time, what is your brand? Your brand is what you do every day on a daily basis. So Valerie, you get up, you present your sports show, you go for your run. That's part of your brand. It's who you are. It's what you do. And I think that we all have a brand, and including our GA players and our hurlers or camogie players, they need to know that, they need to learn it. And
interesting, and I think a lot of people might be shocked by some of the figures, but I think I personally think more power to them. They're probably amateur players and they're playing for our benefit and entertainment, and as you said, if they can get a bit extra on the side. But I'd like to hear the listeners' opinion on this. 0868104106, what are you thinking of our players earning some extra bit on the side? It'll be interesting just to see what they think. Maybe just send in a thumbs up or a thumbs down just to see the interaction on this. But Trevor, Sport Endorse, it's great. People can sign up. As you said, it's for free. Where can they find it?
They can register on platform.sportendorse.com. Download athletes. Every athlete in the world can download onto their phone in app format, be it on Android or Apple. Go on to sportendorse.com. You can register through the website as well.
Thanks a little, Trevor, for talking to us on the Big Red Bench.
Thanks, Valerie, for having me. Have a great Easter.
Yeah, really interesting stuff there from Trevor Twamley, the co-founder of Sport Endorse, and I suppose talking about the money that players can make off their brand through their social media following and all that. Really interesting stuff. A lot of money being paid out to athletes to promote products, and that's the way it is at the moment. And very, very interesting stuff there from Trevor in conversation with Valerie. We are nearly out of time. Yesterday on the show, Valerie spoke to GAA President Larry McCarthy. It's a fascinating interview. It's a fascinating 20-minute chat. That is available on our podcast. You can get that on redfm.ie and from wherever you get your podcast from. But it's really, really interesting stuff as they go through a lot of things about Larry being named. Of course, he's a Cork man, being named president, moving back from the States where he was working and all that. But a lot of focus has been on his comments about the Dublin footballers. And there a number of them training during the week or being caught training at a session in contravention of COVID-19 restrictions last Wednesday morning at a club in Dublin, and the impact that's going to have. And Valerie spoke to Larry about that yesterday, so here's a little bit of that on the Dublin breach. The full thing available, of course, on the Big Red Bench podcast and redfm.ie, but this is a little clip of first Larry returning home and then talking about the Dublin breach and what impact it's likely to have on Intercounty GAA going forward.
We're all looking forward really to the return of the GAA, but before you moved home, how were the college with you, maybe taking some time off? You obviously plan to go back and lecture there, Larry. You want to go back and finish what you're living with.
I'm obligated to go back to them, Valerie, in terms of, they were very kind. I mean, they gave me a 3-year leave of absence. Well, technically it's only 2, but as the dean said to me, look, I can only give you 2, but what you do is we'll get the 2 and then you'll apply for the 3rd and we'll give you that. I think it's fair to say they probably have no concept of how important the role is. They know I've become president of this sport organization in Ireland, but I don't think they appreciate the cultural importance or the significance of the GAA as an institution. They've seen some clips and they've seen my name in the papers and stuff like that, and they obviously see whenever I mention Seton Hall, for instance. But I mean, it escapes Americans, I think, the relevance of the GAA in our lives. You know, and not in terms of Irish people in America at all, but in terms of people who just don't understand the GAA or understand what the GAA is all about.
Yeah, I know. You must be really looking forward to the return of it. I mean, to come home and to be coming into the middle of this nightmare, Larry, it's probably not been an easy start, has it?
Well, no, I mean, that's a fair assessment of it. Yeah, in my wildest dreams would I ever have thought there would be in a situation where we wouldn't be playing games. But I think last Tuesday evening and the announcement by the government that we're going to be back on the 26th, that the kids are going to be back on the 26th, was the best announcement that we've heard in a long, long time. You know, and it's great to get some fun back into clubs and get them started at least. And then, please God, look, we can do this. We've done it well before. We will continue to do it well. But I mean, the one concern, I suppose, the kids will be fine. I just hope to God that the parents don't assemble too much at the pitch gate or at the field gate or outside the clubhouse or stuff like that, and things go slightly awry in us. But I'm sure they won't. We've a record of doing this, and we've done it well last year, and we'll do it well again. But that's going to bring a great deal of relief to a lot of people, not least of which are those parents who need to be sort of de-stressed a little bit by letting their kids out running around the place.
Yeah, there was a small hiccup during the week in this road to return. I know that, unfortunately, the Dublin footballers, you know, were reportedly training, Larry, and I know you released a statement saying it's sheer frustration and extreme disappointment, but do you think something like this could jeopardise the return of play?
No, I don't think, honestly, that it's going to impact this particular incident. Now, if there was another one, oh Lord, that would make it very, very difficult for us. But no, I'm reasonably confident at the moment that we will get back. Assuming that the numbers stay where they are and that, you know, the public health authorities don't decide that they've gone awry over Easter or anything like that. But no, I think all going well, fingers crossed, I think, yeah, we're in a good place.
Yeah, I know. And as Jay folk, you know, when they did announce that, I felt like we felt the week defending the decision by the government. And then for something like this to happen, it was just hard to defend something like that then as well. Is there further discipline from the GAA maybe towards Dublin, or is it dealt with?
Well, we appointed Krista Banishti had an emergency meeting on, let me get my timeline right here now, yesterday. And we appointed an investigation committee to look into it, as we did with the Cork incident early in the year and the Down incident. So we're adopting the exact same procedures.
Yeah, that's Larry McCarthy there, the GAA president, speaking about the Dublin issue that arose during the week when several members of the Air Camp were training at a club in Dublin and what happened with that. And very, very interesting to hear Larry, the Corkman, the Bishopstown native, speaking about that. But a really interesting, wide-ranging interview with Valerie is now available on the Big Red Bench podcast. You can get that on redfm.ie. Well worth checking out. But that's it from our show for tonight. I'm delighted you chose to spend an hour in our company right here on Cork's Red FM this evening on this glorious Easter Sunday evening. Hope you're all enjoying the sunshine and listening to the Big Red Bench in your gardens this evening. If you want to listen back to the show, if you missed any of it, if you've missed yesterday's show, the Big Red Bench podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, we are available, and you can get on redfm.ie as well. We're back next Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Conor Halpin is up next. He's got 3 hours of the best Irish music coming your way between 7 and 10 p.m. Enjoy the rest of your Easter Sunday. Enjoy the rest of your bank holiday, folks, and we'll chat to you again next weekend.
The Big Red Bench, Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Cork's Red FM.